welcome to The Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Pyle. Before we begin today, I wanted to wish everyone a happy Independence Day as we start the 4th of July weekend. Enjoy all the celebrations with family and friends, and be safe out there. Today, at some point in everyone's career, I bet you've walked into a motor pool and found yourself staring at a new piece of equipment. You ask yourself, where did this come from? You start to check it out and wonder why this piece of equipment has the capabilities it does, or why is it designed a certain way? But where did this all come from? Who developed this and why? Well, I'm here today to walk you through the process and the organization that oversees the development of all new equipment that you'll find yourself interacting with. That is, the Army's Futures Command. Specifically, we will focus on the Transportation Requirements Development Branch of the Sustainment Capability Development and Integration Directorate. To guide us through the discussion today, I have with me Mr. Donald Orwitten, who is the Transportation Requirements Branch Chief. He enlisted into the Army in 1974 as an armored crew member and rose to the rank of Staff Sergeant before being commissioned as an artillery officer in 1987. He was branch transferred to the Transportation Corps and held a variety of positions in his 28 years of active duty service before retiring in 2003 as a major. He holds a bachelor's degree in business management from the University of Louisville and a master's degree in personnel management from Old Dominion University. His branch is responsible to develop requirements for all Army transportation systems, to include Army watercraft systems and autonomous ground and aerial resupply systems, many of which we will discuss today. I'm so happy to have you on the show today, sir. Welcome.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
So, first of all, it's awesome. You've had a very unique, awesome career in the Army. Going from, you started as an armor officer, starting in the armor, going into artillery, and then into transportation. I feel like you've seen a lot of different aspects of the force.
Oh, yes. I think I've had a very versatile career. But it gives me perspective in my mind. You know, being enlisted, I understand what it's like to be a soldier. When I was commissioned in the field artillery, I understand the maneuver aspects right now. But my proudest moment was becoming a transporter back in 1994. And it's been exciting times ever since then.
I mean, I know it took about, 3 different branch choices to get to the best one, the spearhead of logistics, but you found your way there.
Finally, yes.
But definitely glad to have you today and be able to kind of walk us through everything that what the Army's Future Command has been doing, and especially what your department's doing and how that affects sustainers. So kind of start us off with, because I know recently there's been a lot of changes when it comes to Army Futures Command. If you can kind of walk us through maybe what the structure is now when it comes to Army Futures Command.
Okay, I'd like to really start off with, Army Future Command was stood up to modernize the Army. The Army decided a few years ago to have a command that was focused on modernizing the Army and championing the things that have to change to make sure that we have a capable force for the future. So Army Future Command is all focused on looking at what warfighter needs to meet warfighter battlefield requirements. Army Future Command starts off with concepts. Concepts is a look at how we will do things differently in the future against our adversaries. Coming out of that is what we see is required capabilities. What does the Army need as a warfighter to go out and actually be successful on the future battlefields? Coming out of that is known gaps. What can the Army not do in terms of being able to provide a force to meet any type of adversary that's out there? So coming out of that gap is basically what the Army cannot do, is then we take that and look at what are the solutions that are needed? And it could be a material solution like a truck, a vessel, or, you know, autonomous ground system itself. Or it could be a change in doctrine, or it could be a change in organizational design. It could be a change in the way we do training. So that is all part of what we look at to modernize the Army itself. So within AFC, there's a Future Concepts and Capability Command that is listed or actually located at Fort Eustis, Virginia. That is per se our higher headquarters. Out of that, there are several CDEDs spread out across the Army. Here at Fort Gregg Adams, we have the Sustainment Capabilities Development and Integration Directorate. Another example would be the Fire CDED located out at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, that's focused on fires, artillery, air defense, those other things that go along with that warfighter function or system. At Fort Benning right now, there's a Maneuver CDID. So they're spread out based upon warfighting systems. And each one of those directorates are focused on what are the concepts, what are the gaps, and then what are the solutions to mitigate those gaps or even close those gaps. So what I do within my organization is all focused on transportation capabilities in terms of material solutions.
Okay. So you guys kind of, you exist in the gap. And it's like, that's what you guys are doing.
Correct.
A gap is identified and you guys go out there and be like, let's fill this gap so that we're ready for the future, for the next, whatever is about to happen next.
That's correct.
2040 now.
Right.
So has that changed with the whole trade-off Army Future Command thing, or how does that look?
Well, I think it brings us back together because I keep talking about the changes in the overall .mil PFP, mm-hmm. doctrine, organization, training, material, leadership development, and even policy. So what it does is bring back into one single organization that will look at everything beyond just material solutions. So years ago, before Army Future Command stood up, we all fit up under TRADOC. After the split per se, where we stood up the Army Future Command, the Army's looked at as taking the goodness of the Army Future Command and what they were doing in modernization, looked at what TRADOC was doing, and seeing that the best efficiencies was to bring back those two commands into one command again and keep pushing forward overall modernization of the Army.
Okay, so it's all coming back together now, all full circle.
Correct.
Full circle, correct. So to be. Mm-hmm. So you're looking at, so pretty much the mission to modernization then, is that correct?
Yes, it is, across the board. The Army we have today is what we have. And we can kind of incrementally improve it, but we're still looking for that future, looking into that future that really allows us to be successful in years to come.
Okay. So you guys are looking to modernize your team. That's how you're kind of meeting that mission, is specifically on the transportation side. It's how you're able to fill those gaps from what we have today until, for instance, the Army of 2040 through modernization.
Correct. And there are two other branches within my directorate. I'm focused on ordnance, focused on quartermaster. My team is focusing all on transportation capabilities.
Okay. Awesome. So then I guess, could you walk us through what that process looks like? How, especially for new technology or new equipment, how it goes from maybe a simple idea on the whiteboard to being deployed on the battlefield? How does that look?
Yeah, first of all, my main focus is to write what's called a requirements document, whether it's an abbreviated capabilities development document or a capabilities development document. So that idea starts out with a ACDD, an abbreviated capability development document. We write and we explain what we want that thing to do, and I'm going to use a truck as an example. In that document, I describe exactly what that truck must do in terms of off-road mobility, in terms of the payload, in terms of having been cyber secured, and a host of other things that go along with it. So it's really spelling out what that truck needs to do. After I develop that document, it gets sent through AFC for validation. And at some point in time, it goes to the Department of the Army at that level to be staffed and approved at the highest level. And what I mean by that, there is a form. It's called Army Requirements Oversight Council, which is called AROC, abbreviated. And that's usually chaired by either the Chief of Staff of the Army or the Vice, or at times the AFC Commander. But it is an opportunity for all the principal organizations come together and really say, yes, the Army needs this thing. And what's written in that document will describe what that thing is. Once that requirements document is approved, it gets turned over to the acquisition side of the Army itself. And then the acquisition side goes out and spells out to industry what the Army wants. Once that's done, industry turns around and comes back to us and saying, yes, I can build that thing, and this is what it's going to cost. So it's called a contracting mechanism, per se. And then once that's deemed appropriate and it's affordable and acceptable, then we award a contract out to a certain vendor. The vendor provides us the capability, and the Army takes that through testing to make sure it meets the overall requirements. So it's a long process. It's a big process, but it really makes sure that whatever we put in that motor pool is really what the Army needs and what that soldier needs to perform their mission.
Wow. I imagine every project is a little different, but what would you say is usually the timeline?
Anywhere from 5 to 10 years.
Wow.
From the start to the end. It's a long and laborious process, but the Army's senior leaders are all focused on trying to accelerate that process to modernize the Army quickly. You know, we've come out of, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq over the last 20 years. The Army recognizes we got to be postured for the future. And so we have to accelerate and break down some of the bureaucratic processes that we face to be able to modernize the Army overall.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. Because with how fast technology advances, what was top notch today is not going to be top notch in 5 years. So it's like, well, by the time we get in 5 years, it's already going to be out of date.
Yeah.
I mean, we see it in the, on the civilian side, you can just see it in basic smartphone usage.
Oh, sure.
Or the technology of, like, for instance, just the capability of your TV.
Yeah.
Is how quickly technology is advances.
It really does. I mean, especially when you talk about software and those things as well. And now we're really getting entrenched into autonomy. And, you know, autonomy is really exploding across the board. And we're trying to capitalize off of it.
Yeah.
Years gone by, the Army would invest and have a truck built basically what, you know, the Army requires. But we're trying to leverage today we're trying to leverage commercial trucks and modifying to meet our requirements. So that's some of the things that we're trying to change to be cheaper, less costly to the Army, and actually accelerate some of this modernization efforts.
Yeah, that was a cool thing. You know, when I was at the AUSA Expo last October, just seeing all the equipment like that from, of course, from different vendors and the way they're applying and utilizing just platforms, seeing how they're taking civilian trucks and then taking their foundation of civilian trucks and then applying them.
I think what's key today is we're turning to the industry to help us solve our problems.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I need. Industry, give me your best shot here at what you think we need to, you know, provide a truck or a vessel or something else. So they're out there, they're wanting our business. They have great engineers, great technology experts that can help us solve the problem versus us just trying to do it by ourselves.
Yeah, it's good. We don't want to just sit here and just be stuck in our own little bowl here trying to solve everything. Like, there's so many answers out there, especially when you involve the competition into it.
Yes.
Because they're like, oh, I got to have the best possible product to be able to provide the force. So that's really awesome how that's able to be done.
When you look at the sheer magnitude of how big the Army is, mm-hmm. a lot of these competitors, a lot of these vendors are very excited to get some of this business.
Oh, yes. So kind of like on that, with we're talking about getting things from, you know, a simple idea to, you know, employed on into your motor pool on the battlefield. So say I'm just a regular soldier and I have a cool idea for something. Is it possible for me to go out and like pitch an idea like this for new technology systems? I mean, is that something they could submit to your team? Like, hey, that's a cool idea, or we thought of this.
We're always looking for any ideas out there because I have a small team and we're not experts on anything. And I had to admit this. My team is getting kind of gray and we're not as technology savvy as we should be. So, you know, at any time, if somebody sees something out there that a vendor has built, you can always give us, you know, at least a point of contact or what that company name is, and then we can research it. And what we do is we don't find the solution. That's the acquisition side. But we write a document based upon a technology, what it could offer us. And the document reflects kind of how that fits into our concept of employment, our concept of operations, and then we kind of flesh that out. So there's many opportunities for anybody out there to come up with ideas that could help us solve some of the problems we have.
That's awesome, because, I mean, so much throughout our history, some of the technology, so it's just been solved at the soldier level. Talking with another episode, talking about some of the history in the sustainment corps, and how, you know, we had to be able to push through hedgerows, and how it was a simple idea from an NCO of putting a piece of equipment on the front of the tank so they could be able to cut down and get through the hedgerows. And I remember when I was in Alaska, for instance, we were as a soldier who developed, using 3D printing, a little device that we can clip onto our skis so to more efficiently be able to shoot off from your skis. Just something simple like that. There's so many good ideas out there, and it's good that there's an avenue that people can reach out to you.
One of the goodness things that the Army's done the last few years, we've really started to focus on soldier touch points. Mm-hmm. And what that means is we go out to a unit, we'll give them a new piece of technology. We want them to take it through their paces, what they normally do. And then we want to gather feedback before the Army invests a lot of money that we could roll out a solution that soldiers will look at and saying, I'm not going to use that thing, or it doesn't do what I want it to do. So by these soldier touch points, one, it exposes soldiers to new technology and other things that, you know, they don't have in their motor pool today. But two is, based upon surveys of those soldiers, we can gather information on what worked and didn't work, because it's applied in a real environment or an exercise that allows us to see really how it works, vice is taking into a sterile test center and just running it through its paces with no soldiers involved in it. So it really helps us shape what, you know, the Army, the soldier could use it. A prime example, we just concluded what was called an operational demonstration, and it was with the Common Tactical Truck. We had four vendors provide us with prototypes that will replace the PLS, the Hemet, and the line haul tractor, the 915. We spent 6 weeks with those prototypes, and we had NCOs from across the Army participating, going out and driving it, going out and performing missions with those prototypes. Some of those prototypes, soldiers will never see because they weren't the best selection. Some of them you will see. But the 6 weeks, we had multiple surveys coming out of that, and we really found out some of the things that the vendors were providing us, soldiers didn't think they were worthy enough to pursue. Great. Because coming out of that, we wrote that requirements document and we omitted any language that would drive us down to those features that the soldiers didn't like. And then we wrote the requirements document to really go after what the soldiers liked and saw as value.
And I think that's great to be able to have that input, because sometimes, I mean, there can be a disconnect from those at a senior level. I think, oh, it's a great piece of equipment. It's going to be great capability. Than those who are actually going to utilize that equipment, you know, where the rubber meets the road, and say, no, this isn't actually going to work. Right. And it's so critical. And I really think this is what fills, and we keep saying the word gap, is utilizing, especially the junior enlisted, who are going to be the direct operators of this equipment, needing their feedback. Because while it might look good on paper, it might look good, like, oh, this is going to give us this capability, but how does it work in practice? Specifically, how is this junior enlisted, who's going to be the operator, going to handle it? Because, well, it might look good on paper to a senior leader, but there you could be looking at a 20-year gap in a career. And then this, we'll say as private, it's like, oh, this isn't going to work at all. I've, you know, from driving it, or like, how are they, that it goes to, how are they going to treat it? Because we've all been in a motor pool and know how sometimes equipment gets treated. How is it actually going to work out when it's, yeah, not a sterile environment, like, right, oh, it looks great like this, but how is it really being treated?
Yeah, I'm really excited about one program, and it's taking a tactical wheeled vehicle truck and making it autonomous. And we've had numerous soldier touch points over the last few years with the unit down at Fort Johnson, 41st Transportation Company. And it's really interesting to see is that the economy of how soldiers see technology like autonomous. You know, these trucks will run by themselves with no soldiers in the vehicle itself. Some younger soldiers see it as very exciting. Older soldiers see it, well, you know, they're not really really looking forward to this technology because they think that their job skills are going to change, which they are, but it's going to make them more relevant and really take them out of harm's way. So that's one of the new technologies that's going to revolutionize the way we conduct transportation operations. If folks are looking to see what commercial industry is doing, there's autonomous taxis running around Phoenix, Arizona, Los Angeles. There is nobody in the driver's seat. You can call it up through an app. The car shows up. You jump in the back seat and it takes you to your destination, and it performs just like a human being behind the wheel. We're doing the same thing with the first truck we're going after is the palletized load system, the PLS.
Awesome. Yeah, I know we're definitely going to be getting more into that, especially in a good future episode as we dive more into the autonomous transportation vehicle system, the ATVS. So definitely listeners be on the lookout for that episode when we dive deep into those capabilities, what that's going to be like. Looking at that, because of course that is one of the things your team is working on. What are some of the other, you know, approved programs that you guys are part of right now when it comes to the transportation modernization effort?
Well, it's really an exciting time for the Transportation Corps because we've got a lot of efforts going on in terms of improving the capability in the field right now. And I'm going to really start off with the light tactical wheeled vehicle fleet. I'm sure quite many know that the JLTV, the Joint Light Tactical Vehicle, is rolling out in the Army. We're constantly trying to improve upon that system itself. So the trucks that we started fielding 10 years ago aren't going to look the same as what we're going after today. We're trying to bring in a lot of the modernization features, like some of the active safety equipment that most soldiers have in their private vehicles today, the Chevys or the Fords that they're driving. All those safety features are being brought into the light tactical vehicle fleet. It really is about safety and safe operation of the fleet itself. Moving forward to the FMTV fleet, units are going to start receiving the FMTV A2, as it's called. What it really brings in is when we went and put armor onto these vehicles, we lost a lot of off-road mobility. The A2 buys back that off-road mobility and the superior ride quality. It equals to the JLTV at the medium truck level itself. So that's something that we'll see here in the next year where units will start receiving the FMTV A2. At the heavier fleet, we're moving forward to replace the PLS, the 915, and the Hemet family of vehicles with what's called the common tactical truck. And that's really, it'll be one truck that is kind of a family that replaces those three fleets as well. We're just finalizing that requirements document, and we should be starting to produce a limited quantity starting FY27 and ramp that over time itself. But the Common Tactical Truck, or the CTT as it's commonly known, will have advanced driver features like lane departure warning, collision mitigation, adaptive cruise control. It has all those safety features that modern cars have today. But more importantly, that is the digital backbone that allows us to put an autonomous kit on these trucks and let them operate autonomously itself. So the trucks will have a cab, and so the commander can decide whether or not to have those crewed, or based upon the mission, based upon the threat, the commander may decide, hey, I'm just going to let the truck go out and do its mission. I'm going to have that truck operate uncrewed. The next thing that we're working on is modernizing the Army watercraft fleet itself. Army watercraft fleet is a small capability, but very needed, especially as we look towards our pacing theater, which is PACOM right now. To move from island to island, to move anywhere, it's going to take Army watercraft to do it. Currently, we have what's called the MSV Light, or Maneuver Support Vessel Light. Prototype in the water. It's out in Hawaii. It's undergoing some testing. We're getting those soldier touch points to really kind of focus in on what do we need to do to that vessel to make it more conducive to the future operations. Very exciting time. The soldiers from the 7th Brigade right now are operating that vessel, putting it through its paces. They're great, providing us great feedback on that system itself. The next vessel that we're working on right now, we just completed the requirements document, is the force support vessel. The force support vessel is basically taking a commercial vessel and modifying to meet the Army needs, but it is going to give us greater advantage in speed. It's going to give a greater advantage of cargo space, payload. All those things go along with it, plus the ability to house or berth soldiers while they're on board. So prime example, I'm moving a Stryker company. I can put all the equipment on, and I can also put all the soldiers on and take care of those soldiers, provide them all the means to, to feed, space to sleep, all those things as well. So we're really excited about that itself. It's a known capability that provides logistics support to offshore drilling, the drilling platforms that you see on TV that provide oil and those things. It's used today in that space. We just want to modify it to meet our needs, and it's something we're going to get after. The greatest advantage of is the speed. Same thing with the MSV Light. We're basically doubling the speeds that allow us to move things more quickly amongst the locations that greater support commanders in the battlefield. The third leg of my team is working on the robotic side, the ground. Autonomous transport vehicle system is an autonomous applique kit. I kind of described about it a little bit earlier, that we're first applying it to the PLS, but when the CTT comes on, we can put that kit on the CTT that satisfies the rest of the heavy tactical wheeled vehicle fleet. The other ground piece that we're working on is called the modular medium equipment transport trailer. It's not really a trailer. We're calling it a trailer because it can act like a trailer, but it's a double axle platform that could work autonomously, providing medium payload up to 7,600 pounds of payload, and can move any class of supply. It also provides exportable power. It'll store power. And it has that ability to run silently at times of need itself. So that's something we're just kicking off here. Just started the requirements document on that. And then also we have what's called the Joint Tactical Autonomous Aerial Resupply. Think of a small drone in the commercial space. You probably have heard about it. You know, Domino's is using a drone to deliver a pizza. Well, it's kind of like that same idea, but we're looking at a payload of 150 pounds and going out 23 kilometers and coming back in. So it's a drone that can carry classes of supply to the point of need, small classes of supply to the point of need itself.
Wow. So you guys definitely have a very busy shop right now.
But it's exciting times. Really is. Because you see that we're modernizing things.
So yeah, you can definitely see Higher Team truly is modernizing right now. Filling that gap, the transportation of 2040. So it's definitely interesting to see that. And I know in future episodes, we're going to kind of get more into each of those. This is more so like a little teaser on what some of the other topics will be and the capabilities that these pieces of equipment is going to bring to the battlefield for U.S. forces. So I think that's awesome. Okay. Kind of also I always like to talk about is like, so from your wealth of experience, everything you're doing modernizing right now, what good advice do you have for the sustainment community?
Well, I think it's important. Sustainment's always relevant in any operation, military operation. It's going to change. The way we are organized today wasn't the way we were organized back in World War II. So we have to grasp modernization. We have to accept change. We have to really start looking at what's best for the Army as a whole. But my advice to the community is help us drive that change. Give us that feedback. We always can't act on every feedback, but you'd be surprised what we can do. And I'm going to really kind of throw out something very simple that we gain from just talking to soldiers, and we're able to quickly adapt something. So ATVS will have a backup camera in it. It requires cameras all around the vehicle for situational awareness. When we had soldiers operating the vehicle and they were crewed, but they were using the backup camera, they said, one soldier came up and said, you know what you're missing is the lines that I have in my backup camera in my car. And to kind of show me, where I'm at and turning and whatnot, we were able to turn that idea into a software development within 1 week. And so moving forward, all the ATVSs, backup cameras have the little lines that help you line the truck up to, a parking spot or backing it up, period. So that was one of the examples that we were quickly able to change something based upon a soldier comeback.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is awesome. And I go back to getting that input from those who were actually operating the equipment. And I think that's going to really drive us forward and really get after modernization, truly, so that we're ready for the Army of 2040. Mm-hmm. Anything final you'd like to add on when it comes to modernization for the audience?
Well, I can tell you, Transportation Corps is kind of leading the way on modernization because nothing happens until something moves.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why we're the spearhead of logistics. But we do want to thank you, sir, for coming in today. Taking the time and just providing a nice detailed overview of the Army's Futures Command, specifically on the transportation requirements development branch that your team works through. There's so much that I know I didn't know until today, so I know I learned a lot. This is a truly unique process that your department works with. I know you're very busy constantly with new modernization efforts. And I know specifically I look forward to the follow-up episode where we're going to be diving into the Autonomous Transport Vehicle System, the ATVS, that we've alluded to today. We really get into the specifically the capabilities of that system and how that's going to be implied on the battlefield. So I'm excited for more details on that. So thank you once again, sir. That is all we have today, folks. I hope you've all enjoyed our discussions just as much as I have. Once again, enjoy the 4th of July weekend. As always, sustainment leaders start here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you like here discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook, X, and LinkedIn at Army Sustainment. We'll see you next time. Sustainment leaders start here.